Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
All right, so we're wrapping this series up this week. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of glad. I'm tired of trying to think about what it means to love other people, right? For 4 weeks in a row is a lot. And if you have not been here, we were talking about this idea that most of us approach people with basically an idea of what they can do for us. And it sort of winds us up, leads us into one of two camps. We're either trying to make people conform, think like us, believe like us, look like us, or we're trying to please people, make them like us, appreciate us, think we're cool, or whatever. And that becomes sort of the basis of our relationships. Everything becomes an exchange to try and get one of those two things to happen. And we've taught this idea that love is something different, that we're commanded, that we're given. And so we've been thinking about this concept of love, which everybody seems to know about, think about, sing about, whatever. And one more disclaimer, I've had a lot of folks who've come up to me and said, hey, my husband or my wife, or, you know, can this help me get a girlfriend? This is not what this is about. This is about our relationships with other people in general. I'm glad it helps maybe in a marriage or something, but it's not what it's for. Somebody goes, I think I know how to get this girl to go out with me. That's not what this is about. I'm trying to help us understand, what does it mean when Jesus would say things like, as I have loved you, love one another. A new command I give you, love other people, love one another. Love God and love others as yourself. These commands that we all know and have all heard, whether we attribute them to Jesus, where they came from, or just have heard them in general, and we all have some idea of what this looks like, and most of the time our idea of what this looks like isn't actually correct. So what I want to ask you is, I want you to think about this past week, interactions you've had with people, and when have you like genuinely extended love to another person? You don't have to just get a picture in your head. When have you genuinely extended love to another person? So we went, whoa. Huh. Let me think. Right? When is a time when you have withheld love from another person? And what I mean by that is I don't mean being mean. I mean that thinking like, I don't want this person to feel better than they should feel right now, or better than me. And so we step back, just like we withhold. We're not going to compliment them. We're not going to encourage them. We're not going to invite them. We're not going to allow them. We're going to just withhold ourselves from them just a tad. Now, the odds are you probably can't think of a time when you've done that. If I'm a betting man, I'm betting for sure that you did. So I've been tracking myself on this, and I realize that I do it more than I care to admit. And because I'm nice, most of the time, it gets masked, right? Because I'm nice. And then I've learned how to do this kind of just withhold just a little bit, just to make sure that this person feels or knows, or I just don't want for them the way I might ought to want for them. And there are reasons, lots of reasons. Some of them are valid reasons. But it's still there, and it doesn't change the fact that we've been commanded in this way. And that's what I want to sort of work on or figure out today. Now, we have talked about this idea that we come out of the womb. We're born into this world, and the very first thing we do is we cry because we are looking for a connection that we can trust, right? We're looking, going, can I trust any of these connections of all these people and the lights in the room? And then someone scoops you up and they lay you close to them and your skin touches, and there's what neurologists and sociologists and other, they call this attachment. The mother and the baby begin to attach, develop an attachment. And this attachment is extremely important. And we know this neurologically, we know this socially, we know this. That this attachment that happens says, this human being says, there is a connection that I can trust. And although when we go to kindergarten, we don't want to leave our moms because we have separation anxiety, because that attachment feels like it's distance. What actually happens is the power of that attachment allows us to move into other areas of our lives in healthy and whole and freeing ways. I think you understand this, right? It's that attachment. That attachment goes with us everywhere that we go. We've learned in our culture that when there is not attachment, when that attachment doesn't occur, it causes tremendous problems. We bring that into every other area of our life. And I begin to think, what is the opposite of attachment? Well, it's kind of easy, right? The opposite of attachment, if you're not attached, you're detached. And so I began to think, what does this mean to be detached? What does it mean to not be connected or to be disconnected? And what happens when we are detached? It's not just that we're separated, it's that we're unmoored. We're often looking around, we're trying to find something. As human beings, we are hardwired to look for connections we can trust. Your antenna are always up, you're always looking, you're always trying to figure out, is this a safe connection? Is this a safe connection? Can I depend on this? And when that begins to break down, things get really bad. Now think about this. You know how infuriating it is to look for stuff that you know what it is. When you lose your keys or your wallet or the remote control or something, or your phone, and you're looking for it, and you're tearing stuff up and yelling at everybody about why you can't find this. I know I put them here. And you know how frustrating it is, and you know exactly what you're looking for. Now imagine the condition of the human soul when they're looking for something. They have no idea what it is that they're looking for. They're just running around from relationship to relationship, thing to thing, success to success, event to event, affirmation to affirmation, trying to find something. They don't even know what it really is that they're looking for. We're looking for a connection that we can trust, and we've created all kinds of illusions of what that might look like for us. And what I've realized, or at least as I've been thinking about this, what happens to us is that whenever there's detachment, it's not just the fact that we're disconnected. It's the fact that we become demanding. So last week we drew this scale. We talked about our worthiness, our sense of worth, and we talked about our sort of availability, our sense of our willingness to avail ourselves to other people. And we use that to create these categories. There's the sense of healthy connection where it exists up here, where there's this sense of that we really get this and understand we're connected to this source. And if you weren't here last week, you have to go look and you can chart yourself. But we basically said there are three things that sort of keep us from this connection. And number one was what we called validation, a sense of validation. Number two, the second quadrant was isolation. And then number three is our good old friend, codependency. I did it again. So these three other categories. And somehow what happens, I begin to look at this and say, what happens to us when we don't receive or feel or perceive, when we don't have this, we immediately start demanding it from other people. And it leads us or leaves us in one of these three areas. And so I began to ask myself, what does this have to do with our worth? Because we're coming out looking for someone to, do I matter enough to someone else to care about me? That's kind of the quest. Do I matter enough for someone else? Is there a trusted connection that I can find? And so this has to do with our worth, and then that has a corresponding demand. For example, if you live in this validation world, you might have a high sense of self-worth, right? You might say, well, I'm pretty important. And so but what happens is your worth is based on your performance. That's what inevitably happens. You think the reason that you matter is because of how well you perform, how cool you are, how good you are, how successful you are, how good looking you are, whatever it is that you feel. And everything becomes about this sense of here's why I'm good. And what's worse or more subtle than this is it's not just how well your performance is. It's really how well other people perceive your performance. And whenever you begin to feel subpar, you just create illusions that allow people to think that you're better than you are. And we say the truth. We have all kinds of things. You have money, you have cars, you have stuff, you have relationships. You have all these things that sort of demonstrate your success. And if that doesn't work, you have Instagram and Facebook. You can just perpetuate whatever image you want in the world to make people think that you are performing well. And your worth is based on how well you perform, how successful you are, how together you are. And so your whole life is marked probably by this sense of pressure that everything is hinging on that. And the demand that you subtly have is affirmation. What you need is affirmation from other people. You need other people to look at you. You need them to tell you how great you are, how good you are, how smart you are, how successful you are, how beautiful you are. You always need this. And when that doesn't happen, something inside of you feels like it's dying. And then what you do is you just sort of project that even harder and you begin to demand it from people. You begin to work to get them to notice you. You begin to overcompensate. All kinds of things happen in this, but the demand is always for affirmation. I'm going to get other people to notice and affirm me. And it's always this sense of demand. We're always pulling from other people. The second one, this idea of isolation. This is where you have a low sense of self-worth and have pretty much withdrawn from people. And this doesn't necessarily mean you live in a hole or in a cave, because there are people who have lots of people around them that are completely isolated. Their whole shell is sort of protected and guarded and hidden from everybody else. We're terrified that if anybody found out what was really going on inside of me, they would certainly pull away from me. And so you live with this. You have this sense about you, and it's this idea of isolation. And what happens here, our sense of worth is based on our own self-image. This is one of the reasons I do not like the whole self-image, self-confident school that says if you can just build some self-image in people, they'll be better. Because there are a lot of people who live in validation world that are self-image pros. But down here, there's actually nothing that you will ever do that will make you feel more worthy. And you know this because you've seen people. They're smart, they're beautiful, they're successful, and they still have such a low sense of self-worth. And what happens is they begin to pull away. They begin to pull away, and it sort of just creates this, and there's nothing that anybody can do to make this any different on them. This is a very dark place for a lot of people because the demand here is really dangerous and it's really subtle, but the demand is punishment. You feel like you are unworthy, and so what you inevitably do is you look for things that make you or confirm that in you. This is sort of these relationships that are dangerous, right? They're abusive or they're overbearing or they're some way to sort of continue. Whenever good things happen to you, you're always waiting on the other shoe to drop because you just don't feel like you're worthy. This is where a lot of the self-harm comes in, is this sense that we've pulled away and we're demanding that we feel feel in a corresponding way to what we believe about ourselves, and that is a fundamental sense of self-worth. Now, the good news here is what you're looking for is a connection you can trust. And that connection is available, and it is always available. And we're going to talk more about that in just a minute. But that's where some people reside. And in this, there's this sense of pulling away, and we're always demanding. We're demanding from our relationships. And then codependent. Now, codependency is, there's a lot of documentation about this, and it's actually a thing that people talk about having. I'm using it a little bit more broadly than that. But a codependent person is, their sense of worth is based on the opinions of others. And it's a very specific opinion. A codependent person is, how helpful do you think that I am to you? So codependent people will typically be rescuers. They will typically be people who swoop in and solve everybody's problems. They're peacemakers, but it's really not peacemaking. What they're actually doing is they're actually solving or masking over problems to rescue everybody from their own despair. Now, what happens is codependent people, right, their demand is that I need to be needed. I need for you to need me, and as soon as you don't need me, guess what happens to my self-worth? It plummets, and I either create more needs for you, right? Or I go find someone else who is needy and then I meet their needs. And we begin this vicious cycle from relationship to relationship, or worse, you have people who live in these sort of cycles where you just have one person who's chronically in trouble and the other person who's chronically rescuing them, and the cycle just continues. And the problem with this is that you never actually learn how to do anything other than take and demand, and what happens is you're actually demanding the life from the other person instead of giving life the way we're intended to and designed to. There's some reasons why we are to live in relationships, and what we've tried to do is, instead of just going, oh, you know, I feel like I love this person, or I feel like I don't love this person, is to, let's get some definitions. Let's think about how it is that we exist and interact with other people. So I've tried to think about my own life, and it says, like, say, this is Mike, this is me. And I have a relationship with, we'll call this person Z. And so you have to start asking yourself, what is this thing? What is its intention? Let's just back up and not try to describe a relationship. Let's talk about what it is. And what we've said is this is our definition we've been using, that a relationship or relationships are the framework. They're the connecting piece. They're the framework through which or in which love is expressed and experienced. That's what they are. So every single interaction that you have with another human being actually has a capacity to it, has a potential to it for love to be expressed and experienced. It's kind of an amazing thing. But all this prohibits it from happening. You see, love kind of gets misunderstood and it gets misused. In fact, we can look at this list. We've been talking about this. 1 Corinthians 13, love is patient, love is kind, love is not jealous. Love does not seek after its own. It does not keep record of wrongs. Love rejoices in the truth. It does not act unbecomingly. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all. We've talked about this the last couple of weeks, this powerful thing called love. And so we set out and go, how can I be more patient? How can I be more kind? How can I be more this? And you can be all of those things and not be loving. If I think person Z is going to give me $1,000, I have no problem being patient with them. I'm being patient without being loving, right? You can be kind to people and just be kissing up to them because they can get you where you want to be. And that's not loving. You can demonstrate patience and kindness and not envious, because that's how the person lets you borrow their nice stuff. And whatever it is that you do, none of those things are love. It's got to be different. We got to think of this differently than this. What I've looked at in my own life, whenever I think about why would I withhold love from person Z? If this connection is designed to express and for love to be experienced here, why would I withhold it? And the answer is really simple, because I don't believe I can justify giving it to them for whatever reason. And what happens is you really realize that love sort of drifts into one of two ways. Number one is love becomes very conditional. And we do this, right? We say, why do you love your best friend? Or why do you love someone? Why do I love this person? You start making lists. Well, they're nice, they're kind, they treat me well, we have good chemistry, whatever it is. And those are all reasons, and they're good reasons. You should have a list of reasons why you love the people around you. Those are good things. But the problem with that is you start then saying that whenever someone doesn't demonstrate those reasons, we then have justifiable cause to withhold love from them. And that's a different case. We all of a sudden realize that love isn't a force, or that this relationship isn't designed for that. It has an economy of an exchange. The second thing that happens is love becomes concessionary. It's like, why do you love your kids? You're like, because it's illegal not to. Right? I mean, have you ever heard this? Well, God commands me to love you, and that's why I love you. Like, if God said I'm free from loving you, you're out. That's not very affirming to someone. That doesn't breathe life into someone. And we read this, it's though we're to put up with him. That's what patience, and it's just I'm putting up with you. And that's not what this is. Forbearance isn't those things. It's about value and it's about worth. And so we've had to back up. Our demanding creates in these relationships an economy of exchange where we feel like we have to justify why we are giving them love, why we are treating them in a worthy manner. They have to prove that, and then we'll extend it. And the moment they can't prove it, the moment we think that they're going to take advantage of it, the moment we think that they're going to feel better about themselves than they ought to feel because of the things they've done, we withhold, and it's very subtle. It's very subtle. So we've tried to define love as something more potent than this. And the way we define this is that love is a force. Love is a force that breathes value and worth into another person. Love is a force. And this is a very important thing to understand. So what we've looked at, we've learned that God isn't just the source of love, although we've learned that. We've learned that God himself, in fact, is love. It also says this, we learned this last week, whoever loves knows God, and whoever does not love does not know God. Right? That makes perfect sense. So if I'm sitting here and this relationship is the framework and it's designed to express love and I don't love, guess what the problem is? It's person Z, right? We all know that. No. If I don't love, it is evidence that I don't know God like I should. Now, I want to be really careful because it's like, oh, now I feel guilty. This is not about guilt. Forget it. It's not what this is about. None of us know God like we should or ought to or could. My point is that our tendency is whenever we realize there's a breakdown in a relationship, we almost always try to figure out why this person deserves something from us instead of really trying to figure out what we need to understand more about God's love for us that actually fuels our love for another person. So 1 John 4 is kind of like a clinic on this. And I'm going to look at this verse here today, because here's what you need to understand. Any deficiency that you have, and I'll tell you, we all have them. Any deficiency that you have is always going to result in you demanding something from another. It's going to be in one of these areas. So the goal then is to be so loved by God, to see him and be so loved by him that it changes us. And this is very powerful, because we have this economy that says, if this person, you know, we hear like love is patient and love trust, but you don't understand the person I'm trying to love. This person doesn't deserve my trust. And I think it's because we don't really know what love actually does. We don't see it as a force. So here's 1 John 4. Dear friends, since God loved us, we also ought to love one another. Now, I love this, because it sounds like God says, since God loved you, you ought to do better than you're doing, right? Shame on you. That's not what it's like. Dear friends, since God loved us, it's actually a normal thing that we love each other. It's like a condition. Since God is love, we are going to love each other too. He's just making it sound like this is the way it ought to be. This is the way it's supposed to be. It's designed to be. Since God loved us, we ought to love each other. Then he says, no one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. Now, this is one of the things I love when we read the Bible. We read the Bible and we go, that's a good passage, isn't it? Yes, the answer is yes. It's like, I don't know, is it a good passage? I mean, it sounds good. Love, complete. And so we just go on and we think, that's a good passage. And you go, okay, wait a minute. It seems like love is a normal thing that ought to happen. Dear friends, since God so loved us, then we ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we do what we ought to do, right? If this happens, then there are two interesting things that happen. Number one is God lives in us. And number two is love is made complete in us. I know you're looking at me just like the earlier service did. You're like, all right, so because I'm not always the sharpest knife in the drawer, I have to think about this. So I said, okay, what is interesting about this? Number one, because it says here that my inability to love is connected to my lack of knowing. And I'll be the first to admit there are times when I withhold love from other people. Anybody else? So it means we all need to figure this out. So the first thing it says, and it comes out of nowhere, it says, for no one has ever seen God. I'm like, wow, no one has ever seen God. And somehow if I love another person, if this happens, then God gets seen. You see, I thought God was seen when I was well-behaved. I thought the more moral and upright and good representation of him I was, the more his image was seen in me. And all of a sudden he says, actually, his image gets seen when it comes out of you toward another person. When you breathe worth and value into another, God gets seen. And then two other things happen. It says, he comes alive in me. I don't think it literally means like, God comes to live in you as though he didn't before, because when we receive Christ, it says he comes to live in us. But what happens is when we love another person, the way we're designed to, right, the way it's supposed to happen because of our relationship with God, our relationship with Christ, it comes out of us and his life comes alive in us. And the second thing that I think is very interesting is his love is completed in us. We are often afraid that if we give ourselves, we'll be depleted. And he says, oh, no, it doesn't work that way. If you learn to live like this, it's going to be completed. How or what does it mean to trust love? So I was reading this, 1 Peter 4, I've just been going through, and there's a bunch of verses like this, but I've selected this one. Above all, keep loving one another deeply. Above all, above everything else, keep loving each other deeply. Do you know whenever someone says you need to keep on doing something, do you know why they tell you that? Because you're probably going to be tempted to quit, to stop doing it. If you say, hey, keep going, you don't say that to someone going down a hill on a roller coaster. Keep going, right? Because they're not going to stop. It's when they're on those hard, slow climbs, you go, keep going, keep going. Above all else, keep loving each other deeply. Because love covers a multitude of sins. Now, so I have a lot of strategic relationships, right? I go in the bank. I like it. We went to direct deposit. I still find reasons to go into the bank because I know Sharon, my teller. And I've been going there for like 20 years. And the reason is because I'm not always a financial whiz and I need someone on my side. So I'll go in there and like if something happens in my bank or something gets done, I say, hey, Sharon, this is Mike. She says, oh, hey, Mike. And she is not surprised that I've done something wacky. And she always helps, right? She's really good like that. So I do this. So I have an insurance company and I'm in good hands with them. Actually, I'm not in good hands. They're on my side. And so, but I know my agent and I know the people that answer the phone. I call them because sometimes I forget to like do stuff and they'll come and say, hey, Mike, we don't want to cancel you. Are you still? I'm like, yes. And they have my card. And I just say, but, you know, but they watch out for me. And the word that they use is this. They say, Mike, we have you covered. Covered. It's interesting. Because we read this idea, it says love covers a multitude of sins. We're like, I'm not going to love because I don't want their sins covered because they need to pay the price for them. They need to deal with what they've done. And so we withhold love because we're afraid they're going to get off the hook if we're nice. We have it, so we use this phrase, we say tough love, right? Tough love. Tough love is where you bring the hammer down, you tell someone, you're not getting another thing from me until you, do you know what tough love is according to Jesus? Tough love steps forward and lets them put nails in your arms. That is tough love. There is a force behind love that is not passive. It is not complacent. It is not a doormat. It is not threatened by someone's behavior. Love covers a multitude of sins. You know what happens when something happens to me and I'm prone to this? For my insurance company to cover me, they need to know everything that has happened. When they say they cover me, they're not trying to conceal what happened. They're saying we want to know everything that happened because our coverage makes it right. Do you see the difference? A lot of times we have this fear of what love is going to be. If we love somebody, we're going to let them off the hook. If we love them, they're going to take advantage of us. If we love someone, God's love comes alive. God's love is completed, and it has a force to it. When God breathed value and worth into human beings in the beginning, do you know what happened to them? They came alive. You know what the gospel is about, what the resurrection is about, is the fact that this force that comes from God to us and then out of us to others, it is a force that breathes life into the very thing that was intended to bring death. Do not be afraid of this. Do not think it's gonna be taken advantage of. It is way too powerful. It bears all things. It never fails. You do not have to be afraid of this. Love is the force that brings life to things that are meant for death. It is the thing that connects and restores the things that are pulled apart and that are decaying under the power of detachment. What we're looking for is a trusted connection. People are looking for love. They are looking for God. Do you realize that if God himself is love and we don't trust the power of love, do you know what else we don't trust? We don't trust God himself. This is a radically different way of thinking about the people around us. Love isn't merely a behavior or a way of acting with patience or kindness. Love's forgetfulness is not condoning things, nor is it a passive way to excuse bad behavior without confronting it. Rather, love is something that is always forward. We are often looking for someone to justify why they deserve our love when the love that we give is actually the powerful force that breathes worth and value into them in the first place. You know, our relationships turn into such disasters so often because we're withholding the one thing that can complete the circle, right? That can give them what they're looking for. Now, the reason is what I'm saying is I don't want you to sit there and go, oh, now I feel bad about the way I've treated people. It's not about the way you treat people. This is your source of love. Love comes from God. And everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God himself is love. The posture of our relationships isn't first this way. It's first this way. And that's what I want for you to see. The clever way I wrote this in my notes to tie it into our series is we've got to let go of our demands. You got to let go of your demands. You've got to let go of your demand. I've got to let go of my demand to make you like me. And I've got to replace that with my prayer that says, God, make me like you. Because if I learn how to receive his love, it's the trusted connection I was born for. It doesn't just create connection or attachment. It creates unity and oneness and wholeness. And that's a connection that you can trust with your life. And when you learn that, you then extend that to other people. I'm going to close this series, and we're going to sing a song together. We're going to sing all of our campuses. So I don't want you to go, ooh, lunchtime. I think we have lost confidence in the force of love. I think that we've drifted into this idea that says we got to find reasons while people are worthy of our love, and we've forsaken the call that when God calls us to love, when Jesus invited us to love, he's given us the power to breathe worth and value into the lives of other people that desperately need it. And this doesn't happen because you see worth in them. It happens because we position ourselves before him. The thing I love about this song is it says, I will build my life upon this love. I will build my life upon it, which means I'm first, my first posture is going to be, Lord, make me like you. My first posture is going to be, make me like you. And then the other line in the song that I love, and I want us to use this as a prayer, it says, lead me in your love to those around me. And the reason I've been listening to this over and over, the reason I love that prayer is because now it's not like, God, help me to see why this person is worthy of your love. It's no, you lead me in the love that you have for me, to give and offer this life-giving force that every single human is longing for, dying for. God gets seen, his life comes alive in you, and you will be filled in ways that you couldn't imagine if we will build our lives on this foundation. Father, as we close, I ask that you would just give us a sense of stillness in these moments, to be still with our hearts, but to proclaim, maybe with our voices, to pray and declare. God, so many of us have thought that you would be seen in us if we're just well-behaved. But yet you've said that your love gets seen, your image gets seen, when your love gets extended. God, we're carriers of that. We are carriers of that. So God, give us the confidence, give us the heart to build our lives on this reality. And Father, I ask this in the name of your son, Jesus.